This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
It's that time of year again. My schedule is packed with bracket-busting, three-point shooting, nonstop basketball action. I don't want to miss a second of it, and I find myself staying up late to catch all the action. I can't be dragging the next morning. That's why I go for a 5-hour energy shot. They're perfect for my days packed with back-to-back games or when my favorite team is playing late. With over 15 flavors to choose from, like watermelon, tropical burst, blue raspberry, peach mango, and more, there's a flavor for everyone. On their website, you have the option to build your own 12-pack or 24-pack and have it delivered right to your door. And if you're out and about, you can always pick up a 5-hour energy shot at your local grocery or convenience store. They're everywhere. 5-hour energy keeps me going during the broadcast and the next morning when I need to get myself up and to work. Visit 5hourenergy.com for great deals and to stock up before the next tip-off.
Robinson, host of the new podcast, The Women's Hoop Show. Each episode, I'll be joined by a rotating group of women's basketball experts to talk WNBA, college hoops, the new Unrivaled League, and the shifting landscape of the sport. The game is growing, and so are we. Listen to and follow The Women's Hoop Show and Odyssey Podcast, available now for free on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hour two of the G-Back Nation on 105.3 The Fan. Thanks for making us part of your day. We got an eye on the tournament. We'll got to keep an eye on the Texas Rangers as well. Jordan Schultz, Fox Sports NFL Insiders, coming up in 20 minutes. So we got this baby surrounded for you. Here's Wolchuk with your NFL news of the day.
All right, some Cowboy news to get to. Auburn is leading Alabama State by 10 at the half. Alabama State has been playing them tough, as we mentioned. McNeese is up by 10 on Clemson, so that's a 12-5. What's interesting, though, about this is, and we did the draft show today, Tommy Arish and Nick Harris brought this to my attention, but the Rizzler, who is very, very popular on the TikToks and on the social media scene, if you don't know who he is, just a Google away. But he actually predicted, if this were to happen, Alabama State today knocking off number one seed Auburn. Now, Auburn's back up by 10, so that one might not end up happening. He also had McNeese State, who's up by 10 on Clemson, making the Final Four. So he had Yale, who's the 13 seed in an Ivy League, plus McNeese State, a 12 seed, going to the Final Four with Duke and St. John's. So played it somewhat safe with the other two Final Four picks, but definitely went on a limb. Two double-digit seeds and the others. He could look like a genius if McNeese State pulls off the upset today, and especially if Alabama State comes back in the second half.
This is the chunky kid that rubs his chin?
Yes.
Yeah, he's all over the place, man.
You know, it's funny about
all over my algorithm.
Did you see, like, Will Wade, who's the coach at McNeese? Yeah. Did you see his press conference yesterday?
Yeah, it was great.
I mean, they asked him. Like, they were the reporter's like, Coach, there's some talk about you and potentially North Carolina. You know, they kind of tried to soft, quietly ask the question.
He wrapped his arms around it.
And Will Wade goes, yeah, they've absolutely, yeah, we've talked to them. I've talked to them. I talked to my team about it. Yeah, this is a real possibility here. You can't BS kids nowadays. They're on social media. They know what's going on. You know, he was like going like, yeah, I absolutely,
can't BS a BSer.
I've talked to North Carolina State. I'm likely going to go take their job. I've told my kids that, and we're going to go play this tournament. That's basically what he said to the reporters, that, you know, that, hey, I'm not going to hide anything from these kids, that we're going to, you know, I'm going to be up front with them and honest, and, you know, they all know the situation. They know I'm likely leaving, and we're going to go, here we are. We're just going to show up and play. And so that's,
I respect that. It's clearly lit a, maybe it's, well, maybe a galvanizer.
I saw a deal where, like, they had a like projection of the 5-12 matchups.
And this was one of the good ones.
This was the second best odds of happening. I think it was roughly at 43% that they that if you talk about the 5-12 matchups, this was right there.
Well, there's always at least one that happens every year in the tourney with a 12 over a 5. So we'll monitor this one, keep you posted on that before we get to Jordan Schultz here on the other side. Michael Gallup has signed in the division. Former Cowboys wide receivers with the Commanders as he attempts a comeback after retiring last season. So he joins, Cowboys DC, basically, as you've got Dan Quinn over there. You got a bunch of former Cowboys coaches. Noah Brown's there, his former teammate. So he's now a Commander, and I wish him the best because he was always one of our favorite people to be around. Good interview, super, super sweet dude. I'm rooting for him. Now, hopefully he just doesn't do too well when the Cowboys play him, but in the other games, go for it.
Dangerous player. I mean, his tightrope ability, his ability to get feet down and make plays happen, his down-the-field stuff early in his career was nice. It sucks because I think Michael Gallup is the kind of guy it's real easy to root for. But being on Washington, I'm not going to be able to do that for anymore, Mike. No. But I think we're safe here, Wolchuk.
That's not going to be the move to put him over the Eagles.
I mean, let's just consider how much the Cowboys need a number two wide receiver and how much Dak knows about Michael Gallup, how close of friends they were during their time here together. I can't imagine he has anything in the tank. You know he's been working in the Dak yard. If he had something, Dak would have told the Cowboys, we need this guy. Doesn't have anything.
Geez, I wonder how much they really care, considering Dak and CD were recruiting Cooper Kupp, and they were like, yeah, guys.
Well, I mean, that's 14 mil.
I mean, we're not interested here.
Yeah.
But I do love that. Like,
I bet Gallup is in their price range.
Yeah, he would be, for sure. But I also, it's just like, the Cowboys are kind of set in their ways how they do things. Like, I love the idea of the players are out there recruiting, and the organization's like, guys, no, we're good here. You know, we don't need to take these good players. I'm sorry. And eventually, I hope the players revolt, just get ticked off, and say, this is ridiculous, and want to leave. Because this team's not, you know, doing everything they can to help them win a championship right now.
It's like, that's like when Chuck Greenberg took the private jet and tried to go recruit Cliff Lee in Arkansas. And Ray and Bob were like, what are you doing,
stop
dude?
It. We're not paying him.
This is not happening.
Get your ass back here. You're wasting fuel. All right, let's get to Dane Brugler, who we love and know dearly. He was on Robert May's podcast, and they were chopping it up talking draft. Now, we have had two mock drafts come out already this week with Daniel Jeremiah and Mel Kiper. And they were looking at Omarion Hampton, running back out of North Carolina, going to the Cowboys at 12. I'm thinking, I don't really believe this one. Well, when Dane talks, I tend to listen. And here's another draft insider that does bring up the name Omarion Hampton.
I think they'll have options there at 12 if they want to go with that receiver. Whether there might be an... All the receiving options could be on the board. We may not see the first receiver drafted until number 12. And so whether that's, is it T-Mac? Is it Matthew Golden? Is it Ebuka from Ohio State? I think you can see how any of those three would fit into what they want to be on offense. And it's going to help CD. It's obviously going to help Dak. They're going to draft a running back at some point, either... If they don't take Ashton Jeanty, throw Omarion Hampton, the North Carolina running back, he's included there at number 12. If they don't draft a running back at 12, round two or round three, they're going to draft a running back. And so it's a matter of, which in that first round with that pick 12 overall, the best player available for them, I think it's one of those four positions, and I wouldn't be surprised at all if it's a receiver.
So they talked wide receiver, running back, defensive end, maybe a one tech were the positions they were looking at. I'd love to go wide receiver if it was Tet. Yeah, maybe Will Johnson from Michigan's in play there if the medical checks out with him. But another trusted resource that has just thrown Omarion Hampton in there at 12, and I really did not think we'd be having that conversation.
Is he doing that based on insider reports or based on what he sees on tape? Because the way Brian talked about Hampton last night, you know, not going to miss tackles, not going to, make game-breaking plays. Am I right, Brian?
Yeah.
It terrified me. Yeah. You know, the possibility this happens. If it's true, as Mel Kiper says, that Hampton and Jeanty, there's not much in between them, I'd be okay with doing that at 12. I just can't find anybody that's watched the film that is willing to tell me Hampton.
I think
the only thing I've heard is the league thinks they're close.
I think Hampton's a really good player. I think Jeanty is in a whole other class to himself. And I honestly... My personal scouting view, I don't think it is close. There's a side of me that's like totally okay with taking Jeanty at 12, but not taking Hampton at 12.
You could get the best wide receiver or the second best running back. Are we even having this conversation?
And my
is this
board
real
is
life?
The third best running back.
Yeah, me too. We both have Caleb Johnson of Iowa ahead. Because I think he's got more speed than what Hampton has personally. But
Hampton
yeah.
catches the ball.
He's a good player. I don't want to knock him. I think he's really good.
He runs through tackles. And that's his thing. He doesn't make people miss all the time. This is why Ginty is different than Johnson and Hampton and Henderson, as his ability to make people miss. It's just rare.
Defenders just fall off of him.
Yeah.
It's really unbelievable when you watch it. But I didn't think any running back outside of Ginty would be in the conversation for the Cowboys at 12. Yeah. I have said I think multiple running backs will go in the first round this year, but I liked, they'll take a running back by the end of the third round. I want that. Round two or three, I'm in on that, unless it's Shenty in round one. But gosh, Hampton at 12, that just seems very rich for me.
I assume I'll be at a Pluckers watch party. If it's Hampton, I'm going straight to the Jack.
Ooh. Okay.
Jack and Mountain Dew,
something
boys.
To monitor.
Pull Dawson right out of retirement.
This is something to monitor. Okay, another wide receiver that gets linked to the Cowboys all the time is Stephon Diggs. He's going to make his first visit going to New England. It's his first offseason free agent appearance as he's going on his free agent tour. And New England's been hunting wide receivers all offseason, so not a surprise. I don't know is that the best thing to do for a young quarterback in Drake May? Like, Josh Allen seemed so relieved and played so much more freely once he got rid of Stephon Diggs. Mm-hmm. I don't know that this would be great for a young developmental quarterback to have somebody who just demanding of the football. But hey, he proved last year he's still a good player. I guess he just needs to prove himself off of the torn ACL that he's still that player.
Yeah, you do that, we're in business.
Vikings, speaking of receivers, have signed Rondale Moore. He missed all of last season. He's 24 years old. He's going to compete for the number three job. That's a lightning-quick player. I mean, all of a sudden, if he hits, you've got, of course, Justin Jefferson, Jordan Addison. I like the fit of Rondale Moore there in Minnesota. And then Danielle Hunter has reached a one-year $35.6 million extension with the Texans. He agreed to a two-year contract last year in free agency, so he was going into the final year of that deal. So now he's got one more year tacked onto that. As we talked running backs earlier, Najee Harris just signed with the Chargers. And in his first meeting and sit down with the Chargers website, he did not have very glowing things to say about that offense in Pittsburgh. Not necessarily a surprise, but here's Najee kind of throwing some shade at Tomlin and the Steelers.
It was just a team where, you know, we lost Ben. We lost a lot of the O-line. We just didn't know anything on offense, really. We didn't have identity. We had a young guy coming out quarterback. You know, I was young. The team was young. And I really didn't have nobody to almost learn from the offensive side. I think the veteran guy on that team was like a 2-3 year vet, and that's really nothing. You know what I mean? Like, he's still learning himself, and I'm coming in, and you know, I'm just trying to look for people to you know, pick their brain off of. And it was just defensive guys, so I'll go to the defensive guys to talk to them. But you know, it wouldn't be too much they could tell me about an offensive thing. You know what I mean? So. You know, through my years, I learned a lot that, you know, only I learned firsthand. And I feel like here, you know, I mean, we got a lot of veterans that I could learn even more stuff from. And even at the quarterback position and the O-line position, you know. So it was an interesting year there. I'll just say that.
Yeah.
Interesting year.
We didn't know anything on offense. We didn't have an identity, said Najee Harris. And that pretty much went on his entire career there in Pittsburgh.
Yeah, I mean, he stepped into a Matt Canada offense, which was just as disgusting as it gets from an NFL standpoint. And Tomlin kept Canada around as the play caller for a couple too many years.
Yeah.
And then you go to Arthur Smith, and it's not like necessarily a dynamic offense. But then also they've sort of, I mean, they misfired on the Kenny Pickett thing. That was like their one swing for a quarterback, and that was never really going to move the needle. And since then, I mean, it's a bunch of just random crap they're throwing at the quarterback position.
And I don't know what they're going to do at quarterback now. They met with Milroe. I heard you guys talking about the Jalen Milroe stuff as a backup, and he ran blazing quick yesterday.
Yeah.
I mean, he is fun to think about. I don't know if the passing will ever take the strides that he needs it to be like an elite number one quarterback at the next level. But There's so much talent to work with there. And maybe just depends on what quarterback coach he gets with. I mean, we saw Josh Allen. Mm-hmm. He's really the only one I can point to that's like, okay, he wasn't very accurate.
Ken Dorsey, right?
Yeah, and then became him. Hey, and again, I mean, maybe, like if Jalen Milroe were there later
with the Cowboys,
in the draft.
By the way, Ken Dorsey here with the Cowboys.
I would not mind that, especially in like certain packages. He's a guy you could bring out there, run the football. I mean, just a tremendous athlete. But I don't know what Pittsburgh's going to do at quarterback.
Very interesting quote that such a great organization could have such a massive void in leadership. But I mean, that's kind of been their identity, that they're lost at sea on offense and they're a real quality defense. I think it does put a spotlight on how important the right coaches and right veteran leaders are on your football team. I don't know as much about Matt Eberflus's staff as I do about the offensive staff, but I think it's important you have a guy like Solomon Thomas coming on board and Kenneth Murray Jr. on board, guys that have a combined like 15 years experience in the NFL that can maybe give the defense some of that leadership that it's missing with Kendricks and Tank and some others on their way out.
And if you're worried about the Cowboys draft, shout out to Brandon Laurie who put this out, but the draft picks in the first round in the Will McClay era since 2014, when they've picked inside the top 25, they hit on them. Tyler Smith, Micah Parsons, CD, Leighton Vander Esch still had some really good years with the Cowboys. Unfortunately, career cut short due to injury.
He would have been really good.
He would have been.
Yeah.
Zeke and Zach Martin. When you're, that's 23 combined Pro Bowls between those players. When you're outside the top 25, that's when it's been Guyton, Mozzie, Taco, and then Byron Jones. Byron Jones did go to one Pro Bowl, but picking at 12, you got to feel confident the Cowboys are going to come away with a good player here.
Yes, I am pretty confident, but I think this draft is different than all of the other drafts since 2014.
It's a very unique draft.
You know, I think it's more like picking around 22 than it is like 12. Is that accurate?
I kind of did. Yeah. The scouts are telling me, I've said this before, the 12th player might be the 40th player. So you're kind of in that mode of, we by the way, at 3:40, we're going to go through at the draft show. We did a mock draft today. And there's a couple of things that happened in it that I thought was pretty interesting. But when you were talking about, because runs of positions, but everybody seems to think like, yeah, if you're the 12th player, might be the same player as player 40. So it's very similar that way. That's what they're saying.
No, I know, but you've also given us five guys at 12 that will not bust on you. You have five safe picks, and we'll see how high their ceilings could possibly be. But there's five guys at 12, according to Broadus, that are guys that are just going to be plug and play, and you're not really going to have to worry about it. So, I mean, that right there, there's enough. It's not like you're just totally hoping, crossing your fingers that you got guys here. There's going to be plenty of dudes to take that can have an impact.
We'll walk you through a situation today on this draft that Zach and I had, and you know it's
kind of like, a favorable spot.
Yeah, you're in a pretty favorable spot with, with how
I think
things
will be okay.
It's all going to be about just how they view specific players.
Right. Yeah,
and because you're giving us five guys that you're like, these guys will rock and roll for you, and they might not really like any of those guys. And so there's still opportunities to screw it up, but at least it's not because there's nothing available. You're gonna have to look in the mirror if you screw this up.
Last thing here, Eagles offensive tackle Lane Johnson has been opening up about when it's time to walk away from football, how his body's feeling after 13 years. He said there's a chance he fulfills that deal, that contract extension through 2027. He's going to be 37 years old there. So it's very possible, but he's not sure he's going to make it. I think he should just retire now. I think the body, the wear and tear, like, man, just you've done enough. You've accomplished enough. Just hang it up, okay?
You want to be able to play with your grandkids.
Darn right, Lane. I think now's the time to just say, I love football, but I've had a great career.
Yeah. Can we acknowledge how awful 13 points at halftime for Clemson right now?
Look at this. Tournament.
How embarrassing is that?
Down 18 to McNeese. The ultimate choke job happening in the NCAA tournament.
You kick the Gatorade bucket if you're a coach right now?
Oh, yeah. I might actually launch that thing.
Yeah.
Is this thing like halfway empty? Somebody pour some out. I'm going to launch it.
I would, as the players are coming in, I would check like the whiteboard, you know, that the grease board there behind you, and make sure it's thin enough that you could put your fist through it. You don't want to punch one of those whiteboard, and it's like one of a heavy duty with metal in it.
Yeah.
And you want to make sure that you could put your fist through it.
You made me do.
Yeah,
crazy.
You turn around and just put your fist through it. But if you hit one of those that are like real sturdy,
yeah,
you could break your hand easily. So I would check the whiteboard first, and then if it's thin enough, put your fist through it and get your team's attention.
Absolute chaos in that locker room for sure. Auburn coming out after being tested by Alabama State for the majority of the first half. They went on a late run, and it continues here at the start of the second half. They lead Alabama State 43-33 with 18 minutes to play in that round one competition. Jordan Schultz, Fox Sports NFL Insider, joins us next here. It's the G-Bag Nation and the Fan. Welcome back, Nation. Special guest set to join us here. Segments brought to you by the Frankels. If you've been injured in a car or truck wreck, call the Frankels first, 214 or 817-333-3333. There's never an out-of-pocket cost. They only get paid when you win. Franklin Frankel, the go-to car and truck wreck attorneys in Dallas. Jordan Schultz, Fox Sports NFL Insider, joins us now here on The Fan. Good afternoon, sir. How the heck are you? Oh, Jordan Schultz going to join us here momentarily on your home of the Cowboys. Go over. You know, I think my biggest question right now is, are they done? Is this going to be all we get here about until the draft as far as movement? Maybe some pre-training camp stuff after that. What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, in my mind, I would just be guessing if a player and an agent get a little bit queasy before the draft and they don't want to risk waiting till after the draft to try and hop on board with a team and they're willing to drop their asking price significantly, specifically at wide receiver perhaps, then maybe the Cowboys would be interested. But by and large, it feels like they're probably done.
Yeah, like a Keenan Allen. We talked about that on Love of the Star last Saturday, Brian. Mm-hmm. I'd love a Keenan Allen addition. I think that would fit perfectly into what they want to do. But I do agree. I think the bulk of what they're trying to accomplish prior to the draft is probably done.
Yeah, I could see that as well. You know, I think it does make a lot of sense for a Keenan Allen and Amari Cooper just to see what happens after the draft. Does somebody get injured in training camp? If not, maybe in the first month of the season, I think these players could be available for a while. Brian, what kind of feeling do you get out there from the Cowboys?
Yeah, I feel like that if they've done a really much better job of from years past of identifying guys and saying, okay, we're going to go after this guy, we're going to go after this guy, and kind of fill a hole or two that way. So I think if the price range falls within their parameters again, I would not be surprised. And I think they're open to really kind of all positions here too. I don't think it's just, oh, we're specifically looking for a receiver here or we're looking for this or that. I think they're kind of, they're open to trying to make their team better any way they can.
Okay, you have Auburn now taking Alabama State to the woodshed here, 54-36. Yeah. They're pulling away in that one. VCU leads BYU 17-14 in the first. That's the only other game that is in progress other than that McNeese-Clemson upset alert there, which is at half with an 18-point differential. The classic 12-5 happening once again. As Jordan Schultz joins us now here. Is that what I got? Okay, Jordan Schultz joining us now here on your home of the Cowboys. Good afternoon, sir. How the heck are you?
Hey, I'm doing well. Thank you, guys. I'm never sure how to get this shot looking right, so I don't know.
No, man, you were good.
Oh. Where are you right now? Yeah. Are you at home? Are you on the road?
No, I'm home. Hold on. I never have it looking just right.
That's okay, man. The voice sounds good.
I'm getting hammered looking at his video.
Yeah, we're good.
That should be good.
We are good, Jordan. There it is. That's one of the keys of being a proper insider, though, right? You got to have the backdrop with your awards and your pictures and stuff. And
no books, awards, books. No photos.
Yeah. Maybe a video game console.
Yeah, my video console. I guess this is probably the best it's going to look.
So, Jordan, we were just talking. Are the Cowboys done? You know, through free agency, are we effectively over now?
Yeah, nothing substantial. I don't foresee, it'll be really interesting for them in the draft because one of the big reasons why they have had success, at least regular season success before last season, the previous 3 years, is that they've been really, really effective in the draft, not just at the top, but in the middle and later rounds. They have drafted extraordinarily well. And given the fact that there's going to be a lot of pressure, I think, on Brian Schottenheimer and his staff to reinvigorate a team that underachieved last year, especially when you're talking about the offense with all the money they've spent, it's going to be imperative that they hit on the draft. And they do have some positions of need, and obviously we still have to figure out what's going to happen with Micah Parsons, but the draft is essential for them, more so than I think most teams.
So we do a lot of work on the draft on our show. We're part of the draft show on DallasCowboys.com. What are some of the juiciest draft rumors that are going on right now? Because I imagine, like, we call this smokescreen season. Sometimes you got to cipher through the BS and find out what's real.
Yeah, it's one of those. The quarterbacks are so fascinating. It really is, because depending on who you talk to, you'll hear so many different things. For example, I think most people believe that Cam Ward is the guy and that he will be the number one pick for Tennessee. But then you have the Shedeur Sanders element, Jackson Dart. Some people have fallen in love with Jalen Milroe, who runs, you know, sub 4.4. Tyler Shuck from Louisville. There are a lot of guys that could end up becoming possibilities later in the first round. And so the other part, too, is like, if you're Shedeur Sanders, I think some teams look at him like he should be a top five pick. But there are other clubs that don't think he's quite there. And if you think about where he could go, if he doesn't go early, then there's a whole bunch of teams that don't need a quarterback until Pittsburgh at 21. And so there is a possibility. I'm not saying it's going to happen, but there is a scenario in which Shedeur ends up falling probably more than he should. And then you think about someone like Jackson Dart, who had a really good career, specifically at Ole Miss, and then had a good Senior Bowl, I thought, performed well and at the Combine and just helped himself. Does he end up getting into the later stages of the first round? Or someone like Milroe, who's polarizing because he's not as far along as, let's say, a Sanders or a Ward throwing the ball, but athletically, physically, as a runner, I don't know if there's ever been anyone quite like him. I mean, he really is in the same class of a Michael Vick, of a Lamar Jackson, in terms of electric running tape. 19 touchdowns last year on the ground.
Fox Sports NFL insider Jordan Schultz with us here on The Fan. What do you think happens with Rodgers?
Yeah, this one, if anybody tells you they know what Aaron Rodgers is going to do, they're not telling you the truth. So I would be lying if I told you I know he's going to go here or there. I've never really believed that Minnesota was all in on him. I think he liked the idea of the Vikings, and obviously Kevin O'Connell and Jordan Addison, Hockenson and Jefferson and Aaron Jones. There's a lot to like about going to Minnesota. But I don't know if they're there. I think, as it's been made clear to me, they look at J.J. McCarthy like he's the future. And we traded up to get him 10th overall. He had the two knee surgeries. And, you know, he's probably got to get his opportunity this year. So I don't know where Aaron's going to end up. I think Pittsburgh probably makes the most sense. Mm-hmm. But, you know, they also have the possibility of bringing back Russell Wilson. I don't think he has the same relationship that he had with Mike Tomlin a year ago, but it doesn't mean he wouldn't be back.
Jordan, go for it.
Yeah, this Jordan, this might be an unfair question to you, but maybe from the combine, you know, people you're talking to or people you're talking to now, is there a group that the media scouts are completely wrong about talking about a player? As opposed, like, the scouts are telling you, listen, the media scouts have got this guy all wrong. Is there somebody like that anybody's brought up to you?
A specific player.
Yeah.
You could take that either way, because sometimes a guy is overinflated or undervalued. Let me think about that. I think I tell you who people really like.
Yeah.
People really like is Luther Burden at Missouri. And I've seen, and the reason I bring him up is because some of the narrative around him is maybe he's too small and he's not going to play big enough. I disagree. He measures out about 6 feet, 190 something pounds. He runs 4.4, which is a perfect time for him. And if you go back to how dominant he's been his last 2 years in Columbia, that Missouri team has basically been him, and they've had a good quarterback, but he's been the offense, and he is a very, I believe Luther Burden is a really special prospect. I don't know if he's the first wide receiver taken, but I think the more people I talked to in Indy, the more I was taken with the value and the opinion being perhaps higher on Burden internally within scouting departments than maybe even the fans know. Obviously, he's a receiver. Fans know about him. But I do think it's unfair to say he doesn't. He's too small. He doesn't play big enough. And I'm not a guru evaluating talent at all. But there is not a front office that I've talked to that didn't say really good things about Luther Burden. And I don't think he'll be waiting very long on draft night.
Fox insider Jordan Schultz with us here in the G-Bag Nation. So I'm sure you've been asked about this a lot, but how are you and Rap Sheet doing? And I imagine that if we had like an insider boxing undercard for like a Paul fight, you got to feel great about that matchup.
We're fine. I mean, I think it got blown out of proportion. I don't think there's much more to it, but listen, yeah, like we're fine. I would say we're fine. I don't know how to answer that because I want to be respectful of, sure, of everyone involved. But I'm sure that you guys, it seemed like everybody had a really good time with that.
Loved it.
Yeah.
On Combine Week. Yeah, that was definitely the talk of the town in Indy.
Thank you.
Sure.
Thank you for all your efforts in that. I was curious how much your phone was blowing up after a story like that. Like, I bet
it was a lot. Yeah. No, it was a lot. I had a lot of texts, a lot of calls. Nothing trumps the Sunday night Bengals news. That was pretty extraordinary, and yeah. I felt extremely grateful to be a small part of it with Jamar and T Sunday night in Miami at Prime 112. It, you know, it's rare to get under the hood of something, especially a story of that magnitude, where it has league wide ramifications, and it was really special and. So yes, the phone was busy in Indy, but 2-3x when I woke up Monday morning.
Yeah, how big of an influence was Joe Burrow and all that? Like, do you think that's the reason? Because the Bengals never fork up cash the way they just did for two guys at the same position.
No, it was huge. Burrow was big going on media row, saying, "Hey, like I need my guys back. This is essential to me." That was important. I think what was even more important, arguably, was the influence of, well, both receivers sharing the same agent, Rocky Arsenault, who's actually Dallas-based. And he had a ton of leverage, and he used it perfectly. It was a master class in agenting. And I say that because, to your point, the Bengals don't break precedent on pretty much anything. But one of the key points that they harped on was, we're going to do this deal together. And we're both going to have the guarantees through year two. That's not something that the Bengals have ever done other than Joe Burrow. Mm-hmm. And they made that an essential part of the process. Cincinnati was very reluctant to do it because, again, it's not something they've ever done. And they finally, you know, acquiesced. And I give a lot of credit to T and Jamar for sticking together on it and saying, we want to remain in Cincinnati, and we want to win a Super Bowl with Joe. And I think they did a hell of a job, and obviously we still have to see, you know, what happens with Trey Hendrickson. But they've gotten the majority of this thing done now. And another thing, too, that I learned, I didn't even know, was T. Higgins grew up a Bengals fan and A.J. Green fan. So some people have asked me, hey, why didn't T go to the open market? I think T genuinely wanted to get this done in Cincinnati, and they want to bring a Super Bowl back to the city.
Jordan, how difficult is your job?
It's tough, man. I appreciate the question. It's tough. You know, the hardest part is probably this right here, the phone.
You can't stop looking at it, can you? You never leave it.
Yeah, well, it's just, you know, there's always something coming in. And as a result, you gotta find that balance, Brian. You really do. It's not something that comes easy, the balance. You know, my wife and I have two young kids, and there's been times when I just put the phone away because you can't live on that thing. It becomes an appendix. It's attached to you, and it's not, I don't know, it's for my state of mind, my mental well-being, having it 24 hours a day isn't always the best solution. So, yes, these couple weeks, you're pretty much locked in, but So that's really hard. And it's really important to me to have, you know, other parts of my life have balance. The other thing too is just, you know, it's sitting on information.
Yes.
And making sure that you, yeah, because, you know, so many things you end up not being able to report, or you're sitting on it, someone else jumps it. And, you know, that's tough too. But it is very rewarding, and it is entertaining. I'm a competitive guy. I played basketball for four years in college. I've always wanted to win. And so now that I'm old and decrepit, this is kind of what I've resorted to.
Well, it seems like you're getting more wins recently. Did some things fall in place for you?
I think the last, this was my third year, my fourth free agency cycle. And I certainly appreciate the kind words. I think, every year you try to get maybe 10 or 15% more. Mm-hmm. I always look at it like, if you can get one or two big stories a cycle, really seismic stories, that's significant. And so, you know, the first huge story I think I probably got that helped validate me was when Rob Gronkowski retired, he had me announce it for him.
Nice.
That was a validating story because I don't think people really knew who I was necessarily before that. So you get one of those, and then obviously I mentioned, T and Jamar, and I was able to say that they're exclusively telling me, like, these things add up, and you start to create, wins to your point. It's almost like a basketball game or a football game. You know, you're not going to be able to go for the 60-yard bomb every play, but every once in a while you got to let them know you have it in your bag. You got to hit it.
Well, a big one would be Micah Parsons, and we did hear some whispers that this deal could be gaining steam and maybe even done as early as this week. Have you heard any more about the Micah news?
I they're talking. I think Jerry really wants to reward his best player and his, franchise icon. Obviously they've taken care of CD, they've taken care of Dak, rightfully so. But Micah's the one guy left. DeMarcus Lawrence left, and they just paid Osa. They have to get Micah Parsons done. I don't see any other scenario that is realistic. He's just, not only is he a great player, but he's to me, I guess, along with Dak and CD, but he's the face of the franchise, and he is a model citizen. You drafted him. You could have paid him last year. You pushed him down. I think, they're talking. Is it imminent? I don't know if I would say that. But I think both sides would like to get this done. I know it's really important to Jerry. Obviously, it has to make sense financially. But I do think if he had his druthers, Jerry wants to reward Micah, as he should.
Thanks for all the insights and perspective on things. Jordan Schultz, NFL on Fox Insider. Thanks for joining us here on The Fan, sir.
My pleasure. Thanks, guys.
Cheers. There he goes. Dude. Salute to you. Krusty's Corner coming up next. Brian, what you got?
Yeah, we had a mock draft we did on the draft show today. I want to walk you guys through it. Zach and I had a lot of fun. We'll do that next.
Thank you very much, Lucius. It's the G-Bag Nation here on The Fan. Time for Krusty's Corner, brought to you by Reliant Air Conditioning, gimmick-free AC repair and replacement. Here's the king, Brian.
Thank you very much, General. Thank you very much to Reliant as well. Zach Wolchek and I were on the draft show this morning, and we encourage you to check that out after our show, of course, if you could. We did a mock draft. We're 1 month away from the draft actually taking place. So excited about that. And we were part of this mock draft with Nick Harris, Tommy Yarish, Zach, myself, and Kyle Yeomans. Mm-hmm. We each had teams and responsibilities, and we tried to pick this thing out. I want to go through with you, Zach, on a couple of different fronts. As first off, were there any surprises? And I know you took Mykel Williams for Carolina at 8.
Mm-hmm.
Was that but okay, first off, let's say I took Ashton Jeanty with the Raiders at 6 is what I did. So when I did that, how did that affect you in as far as what you were thinking potentially what the Cowboys could do?
Well, I mean, it's a bummer, but I just, as close, the closer we get to the draft, I just don't think Jeanty's going to be there.
Yeah.
And we had kicked that around, like the two likely destinations. Vegas makes a lot of sense at 6. I think he nailed that one. And then the Bears at 10. You know, they've done a good job of fortifying the interior of that offensive line. They drafted a tackle last year in Darnell Wright out of Tennessee. So now, you know, we thought maybe offensive line would be the move there. Do they feel good about it to where they can go ahead and get their Ashton Jeanty if he's there, which would be like a Jahmyr Gibbs type, David Montgomery, you know, what Ben Johnson had to work with there in Detroit when they took Jahmyr Gibbs 12th overall. So I'm not expecting Jeanty to be available at 12.
Okay, so you just know in your mind now that you've got yourself to the fact what he's just not going to be there.
Yeah, it's a pipe dream. Like CeeDee Lamb falling, like anything could happen, but I'm just not expecting it.
Yeah, you're just going to have to walk the minefield. Okay, and you made the pick for Carolina, and I mentioned Mykael Williams about that.
Yeah, so I was asking around, and I've developed a solid source who is a scout within the NFC South, and Carolina likes Mykael Williams, and they want an edge. So Mykael Williams, I think they would take over a Jalen Walker.
Okay.
Maybe Mike Green could be in play there, but they are big Mykael Williams fans there with Carolina. So that was kind of an educated guess type of pick.
So that takes Mykael Williams though out of that. And we've heard Dallas talk about him quite a bit, right? Him and Will Johnson.
They love the size.
Yeah. Okay, if you go down further down the draft at 11, right before Dallas, I took Jahdae Barron from I think he's a really, really good fit for Robert Saleh and what Saleh wants to do with playing with that cover four and then playing some of the cover six stuff that he does. The fact that he wants to play on the edge, the way he tackles and all that. So I that's why I gave Jahdae Barron to the 49ers there. Okay, now we get to Dallas's pick at 12. Okay, and were you surprised or have things the way they materialize with Tet McMillan? Are you surprised that he's there, or now are you just like you said with Ashton Jeanty not being there? Are you now just automatically expecting Tet McMillan to be there?
I'm not surprised. I can definitely see a world where Tet McMillan is there at 12, and I think that you know that New Orleans at 9 would be interesting. They could maybe go ahead and take him. But otherwise, I just don't see a lot of teams other than like New England wants a receiver. They go ahead and take him at 4, but they might have better players available there if they think Abdul Carter is on the board and he's better. So it's possible he goes as high as 4, but I could definitely see him being there when the Cowboys are on the clock at 12. And for me, that's a no-brainer type of decision. I think he's a perfect fit next to CeeDee Lamb. I love him. He is my wide receiver one. So the Cowboys were in a good position with him. Jalen Walker out of Georgia was there. Mike Green, who I love, out of Marshall, who I don't know that they would necessarily take. Yeah. But I'm a big fan of. And then Will Johnson, who I do think they like, the corner out of Michigan, is there as well.
Okay, and we had the opportunity to trade back and pick up Seattle's 2 doing this.
Yeah, so Seattle's got 2 second-rounders.
Right.
So if you look at the trade value chart, Seattle's pick at 18 is worth 900 points. Cowboys' pick at 12 is worth 1,200 points. So Seattle's second-round pick, which I believe is 52 overall, is worth 380 points.
Right.
So it's a plus 80 value, like the Cowboys would win that trade.
Yeah.
But if Seattle wants to move up to go get Tyler Booker, the guard out of Alabama, maybe they're moving up for Tet McMillan. I don't know. But the Cowboys could fall back, pick up an extra 2.
Okay, a 3 is an underpaid there, Ren, right? Is that what you're saying from that standpoint, though? Seattle with their 3, that's an underpay?
The 3 would be an underpay. The second 2 that they have would be a slight overpay.
Okay, so you're probably thinking the slight overpay, and that's the one that we got there. Okay,
yeah.
We talked about that, and we said, okay, let's see what happens if we go down to Seattle's spot. And what happened was Nick Emawori went to the Dolphins at 13. Jalen Walker, the linebacker from Georgia, went to the Colts at 14. Mike Green, the edge from Marshall we talked about, went to the Falcons at 15. Kenneth Grant, the one technique defensive tackle, went to Arizona at 16. And then Will Johnson was taken by the Cincinnati Bengals at 17, which put us on the clock with Tet McMillan still being there.
That's a no-brainer, dude. Even if McMillan wasn't there, you got 5 guys that haven't been taken yet, Broadus, that you say are unbustable. So it's a no-brainer to pick up a second-round pick and then pick who's ever there at 18.
Yeah,
and you're going to have a plethora of options.
And I don't know, you know, I wouldn't move away from Tet at 12. this would be a dream scenario if it worked out for you. You could also then you're risking other teams jumping you to go and get Tet McMillan. Like, you might not end up getting him at 18 if you move away.
What about you get Ibaka at 18 and now you picked up a second round pick?
Like, if you're able to get, if Seattle's down to play ball and you pick up pick 52, that is it's a sexy move for the Cowboys that definitely would be needed.
Well, it's what's funny is you say that, Eric, and I would absolutely take McMillan. The guys that were left at the end of the draft, when we picked it all the way through, the guys on my board that were left, Ibaka was left, Simmons was left, Morrison was left, the corner from Notre Dame. Those were the first round guys. The running backs were all there. Johnson was there. Hampton was there. Henderson was there. So, you know, there's a possibility, like you say, if you wanted, if there will be other options there. If you get, I think if you went to 18, you the way this thing fell, you still aren't going to get wiped out. You actually pick up a second round pick. And on my board, the likelihood of maybe grabbing a first round guy, too.
Yeah, there's no question that trading down, unless you're getting just completely swindled in the actual deal for the picks that you're getting in return, as long as you're getting a fair deal from that standpoint, there's almost no scenario that I wouldn't trade down.
Yeah, we talked about trading up yesterday, if in fact, in this draft, that Hunter went second overall, so we couldn't wait to the New England pick at four to try and move up like we talked about yesterday. So going back might be an option. The way it fell for Dallas, if they wait till 18, they still might get the guy that they want to draft at 12.
That would be genius. Thank you, Brian.
Thank you.
I mean, that'd be better than trading down and still getting Derek Lively as the once brilliant Nico Harrison did when we loved him. Okay, thanks. Krusty's Corner every afternoon, 3:40. Brought to you by Reliant Air Conditioning. Coming up next, we're talking this college basketball tournament that's going on, Chief.
Yes, March and the Madness. We have Hannibal Lecter, Barrels of Jameson, and coaches stealing the show next in the nation.